am Sandy Barker, president and co-founder of Gold Rush Cure Foundation. Welcome back to Rush Podcast. If you missed any of our other episodes, I invite you to go back and check them out. Rush Podcasts are always going to bring you real stories of childhood cancer heroes, of siblings, of parents, of volunteers, just people we've met along the road that allow us to do what we want to do. My guest today is a very dear friend of mine that I have known since our kids were young. Her name is Mary Kay Holly, and she's going to share her journey that has actually spanned 12 years with her daughter, Katie, that was diagnosed a long time ago. And it is filled with, inspiration, joy, heartache, love, compassion, and definitely humor, too. So I'm excited to have her on today. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me.
So let's start from the beginning. Okay. Tell us about before the diagnosis. What your life was like, what, you know, your family was into, that kind of thing, and then how everything changed.
Okay. So I have two beautiful daughters. Melanie is my oldest. My youngest is Katie. And Katie was a very athletic, happy, healthy little girl who loved soccer and played for the Blues. And my older daughter was in cheerleading. So we kind of conquered and divided every weekend going to soccer tournaments and cheerleading competitions. And Katie complained at the age of 9 of a stomach ache. And of course, when you have a child with a stomach ache, you're like, eat more fruit, drink more water. And unfortunately, within 72 hours of taking her into urgent care, they located a egg-shaped tumor in her right adrenal gland. It was called neuroblastoma. And obviously our world was turned upside down in a moment's notice.
You're never ready.
Never
to ready. Hear. I mean, you're expecting to go, oh, they're going to give us something, some medicine because she has a stomach ache.
Yes.
Or, you know, something like that. You're never ready. I mean, you really, your life does change on that in that second. I mean, for everybody out there who has experienced it, it's just the last thing you ever think that it will be. I know you guys had a huge village.
Yes.
I mean, you guys were blessed to have so many friends and sport, you know, people from the sport, you know, the athletics and people from school and church and all that kind of thing. And what I found was it was fun. Fun's probably not the right word, but seeing the people that came out of the blue,
yes.
You know, the people you haven't talked to for 20 years, who surprised you that came forward? Like as far as somebody you hadn't, you know, from high school or something like that. Did you have a lot of people besides your immediate circle that came to support you guys, that kind of thing?
That's a great question. And it's hard to isolate or just pick one person.
Yeah.
Because like you said, we had neighbors who, when we were in the hospital, came into the house and worked together to sterilize everything. We had actually one person that comes to mind is Greg Rosine. He and my husband were competitor soccer coaches who, even when the girls were 6 and 7 years old, came to heads and blows, or just the craziest thing ever. But he came in and redid all of our floors, took all the carpet out so that Katie would come home to amazing floors. And then again, we had our church, our school, the soccer community. And we could not have gotten through those first several months, years without them.
I mean, 12 years.
12 years.
You know, I love the proverb, it takes a village. It's one of my favorite. And it talks about raising children, but it really, really applies to this. Because anybody going through this journey, you can't do it alone.
No.
You just can't. So when people step up to the plate to help you, it just, even though it doesn't negate the difficulty of what you're going through, you also feel that hug. You know,
absolutely.
That you're not alone, even when you're in the hospital for a long time and that kind of thing. So Katie's had 6 relapses.
Yes.
Tell us about those.
Okay. So again, first she was diagnosed with, the egg-shaped tumor, and unfortunately the cancer returned again at the age of 12 in her bones, basically from head to toe. At 16, it came back in the back of her skull. 17, she got thyroid cancer. 19, it came back in her lungs. At the age of 20, they found tumors pretty close to her heart in the, kind of in the chest cavity. And now at 21, she's still going strong, but she's on maintenance drugs.
How has that been going?
So far, so good. She is back as a senior in Baylor in Waco, Texas, and actually has honors. It was funny. She took a couple tests last year, or exams, final exams, in the hospital room where the nurses put notes on the door saying, don't disturb, she needs 70 minutes. And in between throwing up and feeling sick, she knocked it out of the park.
So I've known your family a long time, and Katie and I have spoken a lot. That's her.
Yes.
I mean, from way back when she was in high school to where she started college, all that, she would say, oh yeah, I'm going through chemo, but I've got this test and I have to turn in this paper on time and I have to do all this. And not only does she do it, she does it with usually straight A's.
Yeah.
I mean, I have so much love and respect for her and I'm so proud of her, and I'm not even her mom. Ugh. Because I have seen the journey that she's gone through. And, you know, she's very inspiring, but so are you. I mean, I've seen the journey, and as a, you know, co-mom, even her going to Baylor, you know, I know that was concerning to you.
Yes.
You wanted her to stay local, and that was her dream. So tell me about that now.
Well, I do need to say, so Katie toured colleges, and she fell in love with Baylor because of her heart for God, and there was scriptures everywhere, and the price tag, there was no way we could afford it. And we had to kind of put that before the Lord. And it was actually the Gold Rush Cure Foundation who encouraged us to look for scholarships. And Sandy single-handedly found people that I had never even heard of before, the Game Changers, and set up a lunch with us. And they gave us a significant amount of money to start her journey on that freshman year and also her sophomore year. So we were so grateful for you that even allowed her to take that step forward.
Again, it takes a village.
Yes.
I can't do stuff always, but I know people who can.
Yes.
So it's just like, okay, let's tap into these people who have great hearts and you know, can help. But I know that it's a big deal when you have a child who has had, you know, multiple relapses, changing states.
Yes.
You're not here now. Her doctors aren't here now, you know, and that kind of thing. And I'm sure, you know, as a mom, I know, because we talked about it.
Well, it's funny. She's been gone maybe 4 days, and we've probably FaceTimed, talked, chatted, and texted 3,463 times. I mean, she calls me in between every class when she's walking to class. And so that bond has not been broken, which is, I'm grateful for. She did she was supposed to be scanned before she left for school, but she's like, I just want one more month of feeling normal. Mm-hmm. So she did opt to do her scans in October, and most likely will do them in Texas on her own. So.
Well, and I know some of her other scans. She wanted to drive herself. Tell us about those. I mean, this is kind of like, and not just in the eyes of her.
Right.
In the eyes of you.
Okay.
Because as a mom, you want to oversee everything. You want to be there. And you want to try and take whatever burden and pain and just sadness from your child. But that's not Katie.
No.
So.
Well, the one thing I have to commend CHLA for is even at the age of 9, when they would come in and ask questions and I would answer like, no, we want to hear it from Katie. Mm-hmm. They gave her a sense of control at a very young age. So when she hit 18 or 19, she was like, Mom, eventually I will be living on my own. And it was, I think, the first time that she drove off by herself to do scans. And Bob and I were just sobbing. And I came this close to getting in a car and driving behind her. But she does well, and she's obviously made a lot of friends at the hospital. So when she goes there, they all know her name. She knows what to do. She knows the routine. The only one regret, and we only let her do this once, was meeting with a doctor without us. And she had received bad news. And that was a difficult 2-hour drive home for her. And we said, that's probably not going to happen again. Like, you have the support.
Yeah.
Use us for that.
Yeah.
But no, she's taken her treatment by the reins and pretty much is on her own now.
I mean, has it always been like that since she was young, or has she matured into going, this is, I know you're here, but I also want to have the control?
I think with Katie and I, we have a different mother-daughter relationship. It's more like being friends. Mm-hmm. And times when she felt better, she would say, I miss being in the hospital with you, where we could make tents and watch movies all night and eat junk food. So with her, me going and staying with the hospital wasn't so much a mother-daughter as much as just having somebody to play with,
kind of. Support system. Yes, your buddy.
Yeah. And fortunately, she's a cool kid, and we don't really have that, you know, that butting of heads. Mm-hmm. Occasionally, you know, it's normal. But, no, I think it's been a good fit for the both of us.
Okay, so let's bring Melanie and Bob into this, because we know childhood cancer is a family disease, and we know as moms, we carry it on our shoulders.
Yes.
We carry it for our own journey. We carry our child's journey, and we carry the siblings and husbands and everything like that. And we try and do, you know, make sure everybody's okay.
Right.
But that's hard to do sometimes.
Yes.
How did you get through this? How did you make Bob feel special and feed your marriage? How did you, Melanie was still young, you know, how did you, what stuff did you do with her that, you know, made her feel like we didn't forget you?
With Bob, I am very blessed to have an amazing husband.
He is.
So he allowed a lot of freedom for me to spend most of my time with the little one. Melanie, in the beginning, I had J.J. Green, whom I love and adore. I was actually his nanny 35 years ago, and then he stepped up and really took care of Melanie in those teenage years, grabbing friends and taking them to movies. But if I look back, I think, if I can be candid, that I failed her the most, that I should have been a little bit more astute to her pain and to what she was experiencing. And there was a time where I was in L.A., and I think Bob was still at work, and Melanie called me at 12, 13 years old and said, I need you home. And I'm like, I can't leave L.A.
Yeah.
And it was just such a, I don't know, it was heartbreaking that I had to say that. And she had to grow up faster than most kids did.
Siblings do.
Yeah.
And I'm feeling it because I got that call from Kendall. And it's hard because you want to clone yourself.
Right.
You want to be there for your other kids, but you can't. And Kendall was 7 and a half. I'm in Seattle. I'm not even in the same state. And so when you get that call and when she called you, she really did need you.
I know.
And people don't realize what, not just moms, you know, dads go through, you know, all that, because you really do have to divide and conquer. You know, Bob's taking care of Melanie, and just like Gary took care of, you know, Garrett and Kendall, and you have to do that. But at the same time, your mom heart wants to be with both of them.
Yes.
And it is torn, you know, that is challenging and stuff. But, you know, I think you did an amazing job. I mean, we can't be in two places at once.
I know.
And, you know, and that is hard, you know, so.
And Melanie also, she's amazing. I mean, she had a pretty rough year the day that Katie was diagnosed for the second time, and just kind of checked out for a while and quit cheerleading. But then she pulled herself back up by the bootstraps, got to UCLA, you know, got a great education. She's pursuing law. So I'm very proud of her, again, having to kind of be in the shadows for a long, long time.
Yeah.
But somehow finding her strength to keep going.
Well, and it's not just the child going through it that has to persevere through.
Yeah.
It's the siblings. And that's why we do stuff for siblings, because we want them to know you are just as important.
Yes.
You know, this isn't just about that, the child going through it. It's just as hard, you know, for
if not harder, because I used to say it was Melanie's 13th birthday and we had come home from Katie's first 14 days in the hospital, and the room was loaded with gift baskets.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I remember Katie, though, her heart, she went and picked out 13 presents and wrapped them up for Melanie, because I had no time to go shopping. Mm-hmm. I had no time to plan anything. And so her little sister tried her best to, aww, you know, give her gift cards and stuff from those baskets. But I still can just see the face on Melanie, you know, looking at all this stuff. Like, the siblings don't get the gift baskets and the words of encouragement and the cards and letters. So I really appreciate you taking the time to take care of them.
Well, because it is important for them to know, you know, and it's in what we do. It's not just, here's your gift. It's after we tell the child, you're getting this not because you have cancer, because we're so proud of you and we're inspired, and then to the sibling, and you are just as important. And we know this is hard for you, and we're really proud of you too. You know, it's important for them to not just get gifts, but get the words of acclimation, you know, that they're just as important. And we know this is really hard and we're really proud of them too, you know. What are some memories, and there's probably a million, that during these last 12 years where you were going through maybe even the extra challenging times and some Katie said, did whatever, and you went, your jaw dropped.
Yeah.
You went, you know, like I said, I know your daughter well, so I'm sure there's countless of those. And what would she say about that about you?
What would she say about me? I think one of our funniest moments didn't start off very funny. It was the first time she had a fever, and I didn't know if she would immediately go into septic shock. So I'm running around the house panicking, and Bob is always cool, and he's on the phone just talking slow and methodical. I'm like, you need to go faster. You know, I'm thinking she could die. And so he puts the phone on mute, which actually infuriates me more. And it's midnight, and I grab Katie, and I take her up to L.A., and I'm running through the hallways like a movie, you know, with her in my arms. They finally got us in the room. It was 4 o'clock in the morning. I'm exhausted and fighting with my husband. Didn't know what this looked like, having a fever. And I hear Katie in the middle of the dark. She's like, Mom, it's okay. It's just another bump in the road, which made me smile. Well, about 7 o'clock in the morning, we hear a knock on the door. And these two men come in, and they were of the clergy. They didn't really say what denomination. And I lost it. And I'm sobbing. I mean, I'm talking like the snot out of my nose. My eyes are pouring. I'm like, I can't do this. She just got diagnosed. I fought with my husband. And just rambling on and on. True story. They look at me, and they walk out. And I look at Katie, and like, where's like the holy water? Or do I get one of these? Where's the pamphlet? They never came back. I never saw them again.
Don't forget it.
And we started laughing so hard. Like, they're the worst godly men that I've ever seen on the planet. I don't know if it was they were interns. It was their first time and they just had no idea what to do with me. Or maybe God sent them to make us laugh. I have Katie as my witness. They walked out. There was nothing, no prayer. So that was a funny moment. And then Sandy knows this one, but Katie had a bloody nose. And again, I'm on the freeway and I'm in traffic and I'm yelling and screaming, being a maniac, completely unaware that my daughter's in the back bleeding out and terrified herself. And she's like, let's talk about Christmas, Mom. Like, she's calming me down. And then so I switch it up and talk about, you know, Justin Bieber being cute. And then I go, you know, your mom's still hot enough for, like, I don't know, Mario Lopez. And without missing a beat, my 9-year-old says, yeah, maybe George Lopez. And again, that child just quick-witted.
In the mouths of babes.
And so many of the times, even though you weren't talking about my stories, it was her who had this keen sense of, I need to help my mom get back and centered again.
I think that happens a lot.
Yeah.
Because we're the ones that take it all on. And they're the ones that see, you know, as much as we try and hide it.
I know.
And fortunately, you guys do that, have that great sense of humor where, you know, there was a lot of that.
Yes.
You know, I remember when you got pulled over, hightailing it to CHLA when she had a bloody nose, another one.
Yes.
And tell us that story because I remember that was funny too.
So I'm in the carpool lane and she's laying down because she's bleeding. And all of a sudden I get pulled over. And the first thing he says to me is, you were in the carpool lane without anybody in the car with you. And I said, oh no. And then I point back to Katie. She's completely bald, tissues, I mean, dozens, just soaked in blood, and she's just pouring out because she needs a platelet transfusion. Yeah. And he goes, oh, I didn't see your son back there. And then he's like, okay, I just pulled her over. I don't want to not do anything. He goes, but she didn't have a seatbelt on, so you're getting a $495 ticket. And I was like, you've got to be kidding me. So Katie and I actually went to fight
it. Who would do that, by the way?
Oh, yeah.
What a jerk, sorry.
We went to fight it, and we had to sit in, and I thought it was just going to be me and the judge, but it was like 100 people in a little audience all fighting their tickets, and we got the giggles, because you literally have, and I don't know if I can say this on your show, but like the bigger set women with the low cut and trying to schmooze the judge, like, I just didn't know, you know, doing this with their blonde hair, and the judge is like, guilty, she was out, and then we get the guy going, I'm not from around here, and we're like, well, maybe he's from India, and he was like from West LA, so he's like, you're guilty. So we were laughing, and I finally went up, and we kind of said our story, and the judge looked at the police officer and said, if you knew she had cancer, would it have changed your mind? He goes, I don't know, maybe. And his response was all he needed. He goes, not guilty. But we had such a fun, and the whole crowd was cheering us on, because by that time, we'd all, like, shared stories about what we had done, and, you know, one lady came up with the felt board, and she had the car, like the Brady Bunch. She got a kid on the hip, and five kids screaming, and I was here, and he was... So it turned out to be, again, a fun memory in the middle of chaos.
And you got out of the ticket. Rightfully so. Yes. I mean, I don't know. I have so much respect for the police force, but yes, that was not the best.
And he was young, and I could see that he was probably very, you know, by the book, and yeah. I need to give her a ticket for something, but bad timing.
Okay, so it's been 12 years.
Yes.
I already know the answer to this question, but you've gone through peaks and valleys and peaks and valleys and peaks and valleys. What tools have you used? What has gotten you through these last 12 years?
Well, my first go-to is my faith, my faith in God. And when it first started, I would go to my friends and say, I need prayer. I need a shoulder to cry on. And what was nice is having so many different groups of friends, I felt like I didn't have to burden just one person over and over again. So that was resourceful. But now I call it pressing into God, where instead of going on the defense, I go on the offense every morning. I get up around 3 or 4 and I spend quality time in the Bible and in prayer and kind of prepare myself, because every day, even when I get a call from Katie now, I don't know. I mean, you probably know this, but when you've been fighting for 12 years, she lives in 3-month increments. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that, every 3 months, we go up to the hospital and she gets poked and prodded and 4 hours of MRIs. Every 90 days, we sit in that waiting room waiting to get taken back to the doctors. Every 9 weeks, we wait in the doctor's office waiting to see the oncologist's face, because we can tell immediately if it's good or bad news. So I do give glory and honor and praise to Jesus, because without him, I would probably be an alcoholic or on drugs. And I've unfortunately met moms who've had to, that's their resource that they go to.
Yeah.
And by the grace of God, by the friends and faith, I've been able to stay away from that.
Well, and I mean, I don't know if you guys can imagine. Scanxiety, it's called, is real. Having to go through scans every 3 months with a child who's relapsed 6 times. And thankfully, she's on great meds now that are looking very, very promising. Absolutely. But having to do that every 3 months.
Doesn't get easier.
It doesn't get easier. It doesn't get easier. So let's send some prayers up for Kitty and the whole Holly family. And I would love to know what advice, if a parent was in front of you right now, their child's newly diagnosed, or their child's in the middle of their journey, or, you know, wherever it may be, what advice would you give them? What are some words of wisdom from a seasoned mom who has been through this for a long time?
I'm actually going to take those words of wisdom from your husband. So when Katie was first diagnosed, the first person to reach out to Bob, and we were still in shock and paralyzed and unbelief, denial, but it was Gary that reached out to my husband, and I don't think he even really had a relationship. Mm-hmm. And he said 3 things that stuck with my husband that night. He's like, you trust your doctors, you trust God, and even if they say she has a 5% chance, you give it 100% effort. And we kind of have stuck by that over the years. And by the grace of God, she's still here 12 years later.
Oh, and that is good advice. Yeah. I mean, you know, because I do know kids who really didn't, maybe even had less than a 5% chance of surviving it. And they're still here.
Yeah.
You know, so there's always, you know, and there's always hope.
Always hope.
There's always hope. And we don't know, you know, what God's plans are, and we don't know, you know, so I agree, you know, just give it your all, fight, and, you know, and cling to those around you that are giving you those warm hugs and letting you, reminding you're not alone.
Yes.
Because that's so important, because that is really challenging, you know.
And to put a comma on what Sandy just said, that there are times where you just want to isolate because you feel like you're being a burden, or you feel like they don't want to hear this again. But give them the privilege of being able to minister to you, because again, we need each other during this. And then hopefully as time goes on, you can pay it forward. And
yeah,
but
that's a great reminder, because I remember when Christian was diagnosed and I was in meals ministries and I was doing all this kind of stuff through school, through church, all this stuff. And I called and I said, I can't do it anymore. I'm going to be in the hospital with my son. And they said, we're going to start bringing him to you. And I go, no, it's okay. You know, and somebody said to me, when you put the wall up there, you're preventing people when they have something on their heart and they don't know what to do for you.
Right.
But when there's something they can do and they want to, don't stop them. Let them do it. Exactly. You know, it'll make them feel better. It'll be helpful to you. That was wonderful advice.
Yes.
Because I really did go, oh, yeah. I just thought I'm going to be a burden.
Right. It's humbling to ask for help.
Well, and just allow it.
Right.
You know, even if we're not asking, because a lot of us don't. And that's another thing. Don't ask somebody, what do you need? They will not tell you anything. Just say, hey, I'm sending a housekeeper over tomorrow or this week. When do you want it? Or we're going to start a meal train or whatever it is. What restrictions and how many days a week? Like, just offer stuff, because to say, call me when you need me, that is not going to happen. People won't do that.
Good point.
So yeah, it is helpful just to forge forward and help families. Okay, let's talk about where Katie now. So she's at Baylor.
Yes.
She's, how much longer does she have till she graduates?
She will graduate on time in June.
Yay!
And she is a business market major, and she absolutely loves it. She's also in love with a really sweet boy, mm-hmm. and we're hoping that's going to continue to progress forward. And she's in a sorority. She rushed for Tri-Delt because of their philanthropy is St. Jude's. So she also just wants to continue to give back and to help raise money. But she seems very well, getting adjusted pretty well.
And she is, but that's her.
Yeah, that is, you know what, that is definitely her personality.
She's resilient, if nothing. I mean, she's got an amazing heart, but she's resilient. I mean, think about what she's, you know, the obstacles she's overcome. Yeah.
But that was innate, even before cancer. That was kind of her personality, which I'm grateful for, because I think God must have foreseen what was coming, because she was in treatment just as last year, and she left the hospital. I remember saying something about the chemo. She's like, Mom, the minute I walk out, I don't think about it again. Like, that doesn't define me. Her freshman year, she met her roommate online. They talked all summer. And when we met the parents, they're like, you know, Katie, for 3 months, never told my daughter she had cancer. Like, we had to Google her and find all this stuff out. She still hasn't told my daughter. And I'm like, because she doesn't want that to define her.
Yeah.
So she never leads off with that. And she's like, oh, I just forgot. I'm like, 10 years of fighting kid, you just forgot. So I love that about her.
Yeah, I do too.
So
yeah, it's a part of her life, but it's not her.
It's not her. That doesn't, it's not everything about who she is.
No. And I mean, it really could define you if you let it, but there's so much more to her that I think it's awesome that she isn't letting it. Yeah. She's not allowing it. She's not giving it that power. Okay. So Mary Kay wrote an awesome book called The Climb. And, it is, what led you to write this book? Tell us about the book.
Okay. So I have been journaling in Caringbridge for a while, but when Katie was first diagnosed, her soccer team, the Blues, came up with bracelets called The Climb. And that's because her coach, Mary, after a 2-hour vigorous soccer practice, would make the girls climb up a hill at the end just to show that they had stamina. So I was calling the book The Climb. And I sat down at the computer one night, and a couple weeks went by, and I was about 50 pages in, and I turned it off, and I'm staring at a black screen saying, I am not a writer. This isn't making any sense. And I prayed. I said, God, is this something you want me to do? And within 15 seconds, you know the story, someone knocked on my door, and it was an acquaintance. I hadn't seen her in 4 years. Her son went to preschool with Katie. I go downstairs, and she goes, I have a gift for your daughter. And it was this necklace that said Climb. So I took that as God's confirmation. I'll make this faster. But so I got back to work. I'm about 120 pages in. Melanie's in eighth grade, and she's working on, this is back when you have one computer and everybody's on. Mm-hmm. And she was working on a story for science called Mountain Climb or something. I go, oh, why don't you name it The Climb? And she overrode my 127 pages. Not deleted it, overrode it. And there was nothing I could do to get it back. So for 2 days, I was devastated because I had poured my heart and soul into this. So I'm like, Lord, maybe this wasn't something you wanted for me. Fast forward 10 years. Katie now is a freshman in college. It was a Saturday morning, and I text her going, I don't know what to do with my life, because I had been taking care of her. And she didn't respond to my question, but said, oh, I'm having fun. I love my roommates. I'm having a blast. And we just went down a whole different path. 3 days later, I went swimming at our local pool. It was a Tuesday morning. And I'm talking to Jesus, like, what do I do next? Mm-hmm. Now, I tried preschool and I stunk at it. I tried small groups at church, wasn't really well good at it. And I felt like Jesus said, I want you to write the book. And I'm like, I don't know what's happened in the past. I get out of the pool. This is a true story. On my phone twice, because Katie didn't think the message went through. She said, swim and write the book. Swim and write the book. So she answered my question 4 days later, had no idea I was in the pool. So I sat down, and 1 year later, the day I put the last period on it, the date was the year that, or the day that Katie had said a year previous, swim and write the book.
Wow.
That was a long answer, but.
No, it's a great answer. And what's amazing with this book is kind of going back to the beginning. What I was talking about is your journey is really filled with, and this isn't just about Katie's journey. This is about long before you met Bob. This is your journey. And that's what I love about it is it's your journey. Yeah. And that involves Katie and Melanie and Bob and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And you're a funny person. And so, Yes, there's parts that are heartbreaking. Yes, there's parts that are touching and just warm your heart. But there's also a lot of humor in it. And I mean, I really felt the gamut of emotions when I was reading it and stuff. But it's just, I would highly recommend getting it. Amazon.
Thank you. And I have copies at home if you want a signed copy.
Yeah, I still need one. You can sign mine. I don't think I've had mine signed.
All right.
Anyway, if you're interested, you can get it off of Amazon.com and all the different places too.
Yeah.
But anyway, thumbs up my review, and I'd recommend getting it.
Thank you.
Anyway, okay, any last words of wisdom before we sign off to our families and just...
Okay, I just want to take this a little sideways for 10 seconds and just talk about you and the Gold Rush Cure Foundation. I was thinking about Sandy and Gary this morning, and we could not have made it through these last 12 years without the sensitivity and thoughtfulness that you've put into my family. When Katie was diagnosed for the second time, they were sending her to San Francisco, where she was being put into an isolated room where I couldn't even go in. And back in the day, I actually slept in a hallway, but she was behind a lead wall, and she was going to be alone for 9 days twice. And when Sandy got wind of that, she brought Katie an iPad. And back 10, 15 years ago, those were not easily available. They were very expensive. That iPad saved her life because she was able to play video games. She was able to chat with her friends. She was able to Skype. Huge, huge blessing, which got her through a very difficult time. She got diagnosed again at the age of 16. And here she had started off her junior year. She had met new friends. She had a boyfriend. She thought everything is falling into place. She gets cancer again. She has to pull out of school. And there was this deep depression.
She didn't want to fight again.
And there was, you know, the friends, they do the best they can, but they have their own lives. And again, Sandy saw that. And without asking, she's like, I need to send your daughter and a couple friends away for a fun weekend. And it wasn't even the 3 days in the desert. It was the 3 weeks planning it and talking about it and being on the phone and texting and what clothes are you going to wear. And then it was the 3 weeks after, you know, posting the pictures and getting comments and putting Katie back on the map again and saying, your life isn't over. Katie turned 18. I wanted to do a humdinger of a party, and the Hollies had zero money. Sandy again stepped in to be able to throw this amazing shindig with, you know, all of the friends, past, present, and future. Katie wouldn't have gotten into college again without me saying anything. Sandy's like, I want you to meet me at lunch. I have somebody I want to introduce you to. And they presented a check to give Katie the hope that she could go to the school of her dreams. And that's just the highlights. Those aren't all the in-betweens, the mentoring, the Sandy taking her out to lunch, the someone to be able to really commiserate and say, I know what you're going through. So not only what she does for these children, she's going to Washington, D.C., besides having a full-time job, besides being the president of this organization, besides personally asking these children, I'm not going to give you some random thing. What would make you happy? She's storming the streets of Washington, D.C. to say these kids need a solution. They need something better. So I don't know if I sum that up well enough, but this organization has not only blessed me, but dozens and hundreds of other kids around this country that may have wanted to quit and give up if it wasn't for you and your foundation. So thank you.
Thank you. I love you guys. I mean, it's easy to do stuff, you know, for people who are so well-deserving and that are so impactful, and you guys are to me. But I love your family. You know how much I love you guys. And I'm glad that I'm in a position where I can do, you know, a little bit of something here and there, you know, and it's a blessing for me to be able to do that. So,
and for whoever's listening right now, I'm going to just put a little challenge out there for you. Since Katie lives in 3-month chunks, for the next 3 months, every time you go to In-N-Out or Starbucks, match that and put it in a jar somewhere. At the end of 3 months, bring Sandy some money for this organization because we need you. I don't know if our family would have had the strength to persevere from the first call from Gary to everything that they've done over the last 12 years. And there's more families out there that need our help. So help this organization.
Thank you. Yeah. Well, I can't sum it up any better than that. So yeah. I guess we'll sign off. That was a great way to end this. And thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
I love you.
All right.
And thank you all for joining us today. Until next time. Bye-bye.